Hello. All right. I've got it started.
Got it started?
Yep.
Okay. So we should be able to make the RAM file verify that it works and
yeah,
to ourselves. Okay.
Yeah. Very good. I'll go link to it in my office and make sure that it's coming through.
Okay. You'll link to it from file open location, you mean?
Yeah.
And we'll take care of the RAM files here.
Yeah, and you'll take care of the HTML.
Okay. That's
okay.
Exactly right. Okay.
Cool.
Very well.
Bye.
I'm just gonna leave this up.
Same here.
Okay. Bye.
Oh, Ben? Ben?
like this.
Testing. Does it work? Testing. Hello? Hello?
Hard to break it up if we if we do that self-introduction first. That was going to go down through 2, 3, 4.
So maybe self-introduction.
And then self-introduction.
Yeah. Not from here there.
Regional representation.
Pardon?
Correct.
Hello, test, test, test. Are you up and running?
Yes.
We'll soon begin.
I
Kickstarter membership is not for this point. It's mainly to connect and launch friendly, plus probably a few other brands. So you will mostly find organizations which are obviously not internet professionals, because most of these will be interested in doing the actual work, and obviously not the most motivated user organizations either, because the motivated user organizations will want to make policy alongside with the internet professionals. So you will find, I would say, the basic users, the ones who just want to get basic information and just want to feel represented at some point. But for them, it's an important aspect to have their domain name, to understand the way it works, to participate, but it's not a daily preoccupation. It's not something you want to do more than just cast their vote as citizens. And this is mainly the way we see the complementary, the additional role of an ARC relating to this. So this is why we excluded them.
That's what we've been doing in our committee member meetings. When anybody asks a question like that, we then usually go back and say, now, what do you say about that? What is your point? In other words, what would you prefer to have happen? Well, because it helps us understand that phone.
Concerning agent membership, I look at the bylaws, my direct inspiration is that individuals can vote in an equal corporations and corporations. The difference I make in corporations and organizations is that corporations are
members to vote for the election results. This is so cool. shouldn't have some say in this process, but it will have to understand me that I would have to equal vote as, say, North Carolina or Georgia. Telecommunications industry organization that really understands this problem, presumably better than I do, and perhaps represents a much larger organization of entity users. So can someone explain if there's any structure here?
Yes. This is George. Let me say that on many of the technical aspects that you described, where an organization that has the competence, the expertise to really understand the nature of the problem and how it could affect, we would expect that kind of activity and discussion and debate would occur with respect to SO or cross-team. And their recommendations go to the ICANN board. And the ICANN board vetoes, and perhaps after a period of time make a recommendation as to what to do about that particular subject. But the implication here is these professionals have made a recommendation, and I think the implication is it will be well thought out in the ICANN board. It will be in a position to ratify. There are 18 members of the board. 9 of those votes are at large. The membership that we're talking about elect the at large directors, and hopefully they are people of the caliber that you see sitting here. How those at large directors vote on that technical issue that is coming through the SO process, we don't know, but hopefully the membership will have elected. I'd like to say people like people and others.
CEO, that you're interested in ICANN at large membership.
encourage other people in your organization to join. So Dean kind of boils it down and says, you know, why don't we just make them a little more sensitive to the
Thank you.
agreement, but there was consensus that we should exclude mental insanity or lack we should exclude lack of criminal record. But we also felt that in the case of the individual should present some photo identification, some legal age, maybe citizenship, and some general details. Presumably for organizations, that identification would be that they are not part of an SO, and cooperation would be valuable.
me ask... Hello, Wolfgang Kleinrichter. Let me ask a question. What would be the procedure to become a member? So, as a member, I would have to fill in an application form, and then who would decide on this application form? And do I have a right to become a member, or is there somebody who would reject membership on my application?
Well, I guess if you qualify by satisfying each of these things, you apply, and if you go through some process, which I believe we discuss later,
we I think in our discussion yesterday, we didn't write it down quite this way. We said that a person would probably apply online. That we would ask them to send by mail some identification, and we weren't real clear on that exact identification. That's for the photo ID and/or driver's license and/or whatever it comes from. That needs a little work, I think. Then ICANN would send back to that person a correspondence that had a unique identifier that person would use when they voted online. And I think that was the extent of the process that we described. Mandiel, did you want to... Oh, I'm sorry.
George, there was something that came to one's mind. You were talking about different types of criteria, but I think when we're talking about governance by ICANN, we have to be aware and alive to the fact of cyber crimes. I can understand and agree with Jian that, look, crimes differ according to national jurisdictions, but cyber crimes, irrespective of whatever be the national jurisdiction, if a person stands committed or convicted for a cyber crime by any national jurisdiction, that should alone be a very strong ground for rejection of his membership to the ICANN. That is what gets mentioned.
In answer to the question, do I have a right to become a member, I think that the qualifications to which we agreed, and most of the committee did reject the crime aspect, the qualifications to which we agreed are just objective. I mean, you must exist. That's basically it. So there would not be a review committee saying, reviewing each application saying, is that person qualified according to something else? The only question would be, have we received the necessary documentation to prove that this person exists? Full stop. So yes, it would be a right.
I think we haven't really discussed about disqualification or removal of membership. We just only talked about accepting the application and accepting him and her as a member at entry. So what if he or she made something wrong and made some, you know, fraud? Can we remove him or not? We haven't discussed, but there might be some cause to do that. But I sort of asked not to screen up front by photocopy or whatever. We accept them as much as possible and see how it goes. If it's challenged by others, I mean, my personal opinion is that you post this name and your perhaps go hell as a member, this opens the rest of the world. Then somebody want to challenge, can challenge, so that there's some kind of procedural panel may give certain, you know, conditions to them, start checking, and if then we'll say, no, you're not qualified, but not upfront, with a trust upfront.
Is the person on adult?
guy exists. Otherwise, you cannot prove that he exists. So that if he has internet access, I think it's okay.
Great crew,
applies, in essence, he's agreeing to some
bound by the bylaws of whatever constitution document that exists. And so once he's applied, within that scope of rules, the person can be managed or his behavior can be contained. And that's the first observation. The second one is, I wanted to shed some more light on the civil female access. Some potential members might share email addresses in a communal way with the artists. Maybe their numbers are not much, but these are future users of the internet. We should make an effort to encourage them. And for that reason, we didn't feel like closing the door on them, and that is why we chose that minimal one.
Well, thanks, Nightmixer. Another procedural question. You have explained how to get a member, but what about how to lose membership? You are a member for your lifetime, or what is the idea?
As long as you pay your fee. If there is one.
Probably we are coming back to these on the discussion about fees.
However, there is a sense that there is a renewal of the project. There might be a fee or not, but it's taken to maintaining your membership information current. So I feel that we didn't really discuss it, but the feeling I got is that we almost assumed that there will be a renewal.
I think that's a fair recap. I don't think we discussed it.
Well, I had a remark, if you remember, it was this, that a member should act his rights, which is mainly he should vote. And that was a meaning, maybe it was not so clear, because I intend to speak a little bit cryptographic, but the meaning was, if somebody doesn't vote, he's out for the next year. Could be an approach, it was just a voice.
Have them introduce themselves.
And for the information that the lunch will be starting from 1 o'clock, not 12.
Right. Lunch will be at 1 o'clock, we'll take a break at 1.
And perhaps come back at 2.
Michael
Sander, I'm the chairman of the ICII, he represents. My name is Jörg Dienster.
Thank you.
about ready to go to feed, I think. We're seeing our feed discussion to Dao. Dao Takahashi will now talk to us about bees, and then we'll again include the audience.
Describing or talking about some of the main issues we have discussed and which conditions all the decisions about the membership fee. And then I will present a number of alternatives we have discussed and then colleagues on my talk about their positions concerning this proposed alternative. So, main issues which pervade all discussions concerning membership fees. The first one is the following. Fees are important in one, recover costs of membership administration and support, which means dealing with members, they actually cost money because you must have people so that you have this out amount of cost and you must pay for them. So that the fees could be a way for you to recover some of those costs either on a partial basis or either all the costs. So anyway, that's something that should be considered. So that fees are important in this sense. The second reason why fees are important are to help reduce fraud. If you decide that you're going to charge a fixed fee for an individual member, then you're somehow trying to also make it more costly for someone to create a number of fake members and try to do whatever this someone wishes to do, which is most convenient for us all. So first, fees are important for these two reasons. You should be paying something to ICANN so that you could handle those costs concerning membership. Of course, you can think first of all about members paying for this, individual members and additional members. But some of the members of the committee came with the idea that third parties should be responsible for the ICANN so that the money could be used in order to pay for these activities related to membership. So actually, some people raised the issue of not charging members, but having another way to collect funds in order to pay for the membership registration costs. See, another point which was raised was the idea of having a period of grace in the beginning of the bootstrapping period during the meeting with my special groups, taking into account the fact that we want to have a large membership as soon as possible. And maybe one way of doing that was to have a waiver or whatever for any kind of membership fee scheme we decided to adopt. And five, there is always a hidden problem which has to do with how payments are going to be made if you talk about membership fees. It's more or less implicitly the discussion about qualification that we are not going to be able to do everything we want concerning membership through email or through other means, which means if you're going to be dealing with snail mail, it means that you're going to have some people who will have to process their snail mail and then get back with an answer, a letter, and so on, which is not going to be sent snail mail, which means that you're going to have quite a lot of activities in that everything should be done through the net. But concerning payment, if you talk about doing payment through internet, you will force them to buy on internet, such as Star, Nix, ISP. If you talk about DNS, if you talk about IP addresses, or if you talk about email addresses, respectively. So this is also something we have to think about in any proposal for membership fee. And finally, concerning this general comment, there is something, there is much to be discussed about regional aspects. One is the fact that you fix an amount and say, well, this is the minimum fee for an individual member. And that may be something in the US, and that may be something different altogether in a poor country, which means it's very difficult for you to define a reasonable minimal fee which is accepted as the minimal as one is. So, given these general comments, we have four items to present which were discussed during our session. One is the following. Suppose that for the sake of reference, we think about something like having in the developed world, let's say, $35 per individual member as a minimum, and in developing countries, something like $12, which is more or less what ISOC charges for its individual members. And let us take into consideration that in the case of ISOC, they spend $10 per each individual member to assist the member in getting registered, voting, and so on. So that ISOC models does not suppose that you're going to actually have to get money from elsewhere in order to pay for administration tasks. Okay. But then we have at least one member of the committee who defends the idea that you should have zero payment as a rule for individual members at the ISOC at large membership party, which means people should be allowed to become individual members paying nothing at all. And I would like Kanchana to talk about this.
Thank you. My reason for putting zero membership fee to happen is many of the reasons was discussed by Tadio, like for example, the cost recovery, you know, from the ICANN point of view, fees can be used for cost recovery of the election process or the administration of membership, which if you set minimum fee, I do not think that it can make anything. It's not worth it. So I think that ICANN has income from other resources, like from the SO. So this cost recovery is now, if I look from the point of view of, you know, people in developing countries, I would like to be treated equal to anyone, you know, who are ICANN members. I don't want to be in a position where someone else was paying to compensate for my membership. I would like to be treated as equal to people from rich countries. And of course, there are rich people in developing countries who can afford to pay a fee and who can afford to pay for my registration fee, but I don't think that is the situation we should encourage. So from that point of view, I would say that zero membership fee is a good scheme.
Okay, thank you. Now, at the other extreme, we have some people at the committee who say that every individual member should pay something, which means there is too much. More than that, each individual member should pay at least part of the lunch. And I would like to invite Siegfried to talk about that.
My name is the World Coroner. I'm the bad guy. I'm asking for money. Let me first remember again what we did not talk about. We did not talk about duration or a period for which this fee is collected. It's monthly, yearly, 2 yearly, whatever. We did also not talk about if we will have an initial fee or something like this and then the renewal different of it. We did not consider it. We just were speaking about fees. And as Tatar said, we were agreeing that associations would have to pay a fee. It was no discussion about that. Now, I am asking for individuals to pay something at least. There were some remarks about internet users are already paying fees in other relations, for example, getting access, getting domain names, etc. And the cost should be recovered from these. Well, I am against bundling. I think that bundling is not for the benefit of end users. So I would very much prefer to have it unbundled so everybody can see which part of the service costs how much. I won't go further details, but you will see these principles could be used in many parts of our life. On the other side, I see that collecting the fee costs money, and it could be that collecting the fee in some countries is even quite possible because of financial restrictions. To make it clear, I also suggest that the administration of these is not done in a rich country in which the costs are high. I think this is a chance to transfer a part of ICANN's work to developing countries, so helping them to build up infrastructure on one side, and on the other side to keep the costs low. Well, to put it on a sentence, I agree on the saying that we say somehow in Germany, if you don't pay, it is worth nothing. So I would like that people know it is worth something.
Thank you, Siegfried. And then, three, we have a middle ground position, which advocates for a flexible fee scheme, a more international contribution base rather than as it exists a list of membership classes or prices or fees or whatever. And Zoom is going to be talking about this.
Yeah, to put it simply, how much you want, you should pay, you decide. If it's worth $100, you pay $100. Or if you can, but still you want to be a member, fine, zero. There are certain reasons, as Tadao said, that there's two reasons: recovery, cost recovery, and reduced fraud. For cost, I'm not too sure how many people are you thinking of to become a member of ICANN. Let's say, like 5,000 people. If the cost is, say, $10 each, which means
$50,000.
Okay. In proportion to the overall budget of ICANN, is it negligible?
Not quite.
Is it large?
Not quite either.
Maybe the president or CEO cost salary could be much more than $50,000.
One person cost to run.
Versus one book per year. And I think I'm sure that ICANN can raise $50,000 by any other means, including contributions, including sponsorship, or any other service, or any other creative ways to make the t-shirt sell, I don't know. But we shouldn't be bound that the only way, fair way, because the cost is generated, so that it is imposed a bundled, say, cost recovery basis, I don't take it because of the purpose, objective function of ICANN. Second one, reduce fraud. That gives more easier way to make fraud for the rich people.
Yes.
And I don't think that's the way to do that. It gives incentive to the people who might make more money who make more fraud. So make it zero.
How can you then make this organization or body sustainable?
And that's where I'm trying to propose first contribution model, like many museums, or may not be taxed, but as somebody said, I think we can also combine perhaps some fees derived from the services, i.e. the IP address allocation or domain name, whatever. And it shouldn't be also too high per each transaction. And another factor is, yes, sending money from, I don't remember, from Japan to US usually, you have to pay $25 or $10 or $5 or whatever. That doesn't make sense. And some developing countries as well. If you can pull, say, 500 people from Malaysia to send this batch, then yes. But then it will give more administrative headache, perhaps. And unfortunately. So, all combined, I'd rather try to find some creative or conventional wisdom of making contribution and sponsorship, some kind of service to be combined.
Thank you, Sonny. But then, Daniel Kaplan has some words about sponsorship.
Yes, I agree there are a few creative ways in which I can decide.
Proposition by some centers.
it is much advisable for us to adopt a wait and watch policy. Let us adopt a moratorium period for about 12 to 24 months, depending upon mutually acceptable time frame, in which let us allow as many people to become members free of cost without paying any money, so that at least I can declare off a membership support base, following which we can then think of imposing fee after some period of time. But to begin by a premise that you must pay up before you begin, I'm sorry, we will only land up restricting the membership base structure of ICANN. And a lot of people, in any case, ultimately only the committed people will remain. But let us have this moratorium period, because it will tantamount to buying your freedom to talk about ICANN matters by paying the fee, which to begin with is not a correct proposition. Let us have the freedom to be a part of the ICANN process as a member by not paying in the beginning. However, even people who will not pay in the beginning will, during this experimental period, have a time to have a feel of the thing. How is ICANN going? Is it really worth it? Do they really want to become members or not? So that then it's an option that's available to both ICANN as also to members to exercise and after moratorium period is over. But therefore, it's best to have a wait and watch policy rather than to begin having fortresses, walls around you before the battle has even begun.
Thank you. So this is more or less what we have about membership. So we invite the audience to come.
Yes. Please say how much you want to pay.
Oh,
I have a number of comments to make. Yeah, Michael Sandow at ICIIU. I have a number of comments to make. I'm going to start in reverse order with the last thing, Mr. Dougal. It sounds good, you know, what you said. You have me convinced, theoretically. But ICANN does need funding, doesn't it? It's either going to get it from its members or it's going to get it from corporate sponsors, one or the other. So I think we have to pay attention to what Daniel Kaplan said. You know, if ICANN doesn't get its funding, or start getting its funding pretty soon from its membership, that is self-funding, funding itself, then it's going to continue taking larger and larger amounts of corporate sponsorship. And I think that is the greater of the two dangers, personally. I think if you look at the situation, this is the beginning of an organization. You know, how do we want to define it? Is it a real membership organization, as I think most of us want it to be? If it is, then the membership has got to support itself. If it isn't, then it's going to be supported by corporations, and they're going to determine the policies. It's going to be one of them.
I can appreciate, sir, your concern. My only question is, whatever I have proposed is not in absolute terms. It is a moratorium period of 12 to 24 months, depending upon the time. We are not looking at complete freedom of not to pay. We are looking at the members wanting to pay. However, in the initial time, when ICANN is already incurring a lot of expenditure, this additional expenditure, as Yumi said, the total number of the dues that you can possibly theoretically expect from 5,000 members, considering the fee, $10 is $50,000. Now that's not that kind of an amount. And why? The question, the argument is, why do you want to deprive people of the initial? Let them decide after the initial experimental period is over whether they want to pay up and speak up or not. But this corporate funding or hoping funding from other sources could be had only for the initial period. I'm not talking of an indefinite, absolute freedom of not to pay and yet to speak. But to begin with, it's an experiment. It may fail, it may not fail. But as internet has grown as a free medium, I think all of us would be in for this proposition that let's grow in the initial period of experiment as a free medium. Thereafter, as the Yumi said, somebody wants to cut, somebody can cut. Thereafter, it becomes mandatory for all members to contribute. But this is not an absolute terms to be applicable for infinite. It's only for a limited period of a year for each.
Yes, your parents tell that, no. I would tend to agree with Kanchana Baba that you could have started up the bottom fees, avoid the burden of collecting the money, and we may have a chance to get a bit larger membership. It will be a problem anyway to get the large membership that ICON need to be a proper representative body. As far as funding of ICON is concerned, I think most of the funding is envisaged through the MSOs and through the registries that will collect domain fees from these same people that will need the representation of ICON. So the central premise should be, in my view, that those who are being regulated need representation on the board of ICON. Those who pay domain name taxes or fees to registries will be represented in both. This can be without a membership fee initially, and maybe it can be without a membership fee forever.
Yes, another view?
My name is Benny Romarchi. Additional from Mr. Densadet, I would like to add about the, I'm agree with the ideas of Africa, but also we have to concern about dynamic fee. It means that the amount of fee depends on the economic growth parametric of the country. That's my opinion.
Yeah, ABIA sort of applied the July 1st, 1997 is the conversion rate of the US dollars, and also we have some scale.
Well, I'm coming back to this argument of bundling, because there were this proposal that some people are already paying for the domain names. On the other side, we should consider that we are not only allowing domain names holders to be members, but it would mean that other kinds of members are not paying anything, as contrary to ones which are indirectly paying something, and I don't see this, that justice.
I just like to bring some more discussion around this sponsorship issue. I sympathize with the concern, I guess, related to capture here. On the other hand, if we stretch it too far, sell services, it's getting to be quite dangerous now, because I can sell services, names, addresses, and so forth. And so then I ask the question, why can't it therefore sell advert space? Isn't that sponsorship? I'm trying to, it's at the border now. Why can't I can say, if you give me some money, I'll put your logo on my web page. So we are at the border of, selling services and also sponsorship, and so we need to be very cautious so that we don't get hung up in the process.
I'm
not sure what the name is in the US, but there is an agency that auctions wavelength. So suppose the FCC sells website to a buyer of a certain wavelength, I would seriously doubt how the auction has been dealt with. And the FCC has a regulated rule as well, and seriously doubt most of the decisions that have even an influence on that sponsor. But sponsorship is very, from us, contributions. If it's a contribution with nothing in return, I have no problem with that. Nothing at all. So there are several levels, and again, we can think about imagination.
find it. I'm not saying it should all go. Sponsorship, as it turns out, meaning there is, will be something in return in terms of notoriety.
What, $50,000? for the whole operation of ICANN?
Give it to me then, I might change.
Any comments from the floor?
I didn't tell you that. Please speak slowly for those who don't understand much of English.
Thank you.
I think it was Mr. Kampam or Mr. Langenbach that would want to comment on the set that can you say it again?
Yeah, it was me. I was making the point that using the argument that it should be paid out of domain name fees implies a problem in so far as we are allowing people to join which do not have domain name. So therefore, these people are treated not equal to those which have a domain name.
My response to that would be the people that are likely to be attracted to become members of ICANN will be the people whose interests are likely to be affected. The users who are not the main members are still, as other people have pointed out, they pay for access, they pay for other internet services. But they do not pay as much as the main members. They are not supposed to be affected. If ICANN would follow a policy that anybody can become a member, it's fine. But in reality, I would still think that the membership would be largely composed of people with domain members. And let the other people have a free ride. I wouldn't mind. They would, if they contribute to the process, they will contribute with their time and their thoughts, and let it be. Personally, I think ICANN should be an organization for representing the people that are most needed. But if it is going to be open, then let those members have free rent.
As you well know, I have a lot of empathy for the points you just made. As you well know, what we're talking about here only is the at-large membership, just half of the bicameral board. And what they're really doing is their primary right is to elect directors, candidates for directors of the board.
Again, I would like to follow Job's direction, and I could believe he's right in so far that mostly domain name holders will join, and I would go further and say mostly people from US, Canada, and Europe will join. So it is more one reason more to ask for fees, because these are the rich ones.
Yes, may I also follow up what you said and what Siegfried said? I have difficulty in agreeing with those only who are directly affected me, the main member of ICANN, at large. I was in Washington, D.C. discussing how, joining the conference, how to develop IT and internet in Africa. Okay. I'm involved in Asia, too, for these matters. And if ICANN's constituency is only those who are using the net today and tomorrow, or day after tomorrow, my interpretation of at large, as well as being global and inclusive from the white paper, different from the green paper, was that we should look into these indirect today, but direct stakeholders tomorrow, being reasonably representative. I don't mean that all the commercial stakeholders are bad or something like that. event, but the decision I can make today may affect immediately of those who could come online and not come in 2 years. Same thing. I see some people from Myanmar registered. Is there any people from Myanmar? But they have registered to come. So, for Bhutan, the UNDP is now trying to give internet access to the Bhutan with all the regulatory framework, things like that. So I think somehow you have to think about that. The decision that ICANN will make, the board will make, will influence the sort of the distribution of these events. So we need to find some.
Okay, let's go to member registration. You may have covered this in the answer to a question, but I think it's worth discussing it in particular. Oscar Robles will lead us in a discussion. Member registration.
Looking at the
document. I think rather complex methods of identifying members. Given the unique identification voting purposes, we need to look at the value to an entity or to someone to falsify the information. The main value of being a member of likely is to vote for one of the records. If you could capture a large number of votes for a region, the most you can vote, the number of votes you can vote for in a region is 4, the most you can link to a region is 4. I would think that, and that's 4 directors in a total board membership of 19. So that I really wonder, and first of all, the value on the part of any individual in falsifying their information in the membership, really question the need for absolute identification that the entity exists as long as voting takes place and registration is made. Should I care to be concerned about what's been my identity?
This is in continuation with what Grady said. It just is a question of you're concerned, and there's a concern from large quarters that we need to prevent, as far as possible, dubious elections, rigging of elections, or elections which are fraud per se on their face. That's the necessity possibly for asking for identification in the real world. We can have n number of registrations online from different quarters served in my vested interests for limited purposes of winning elections. Now, that being the case, this may not really represent the true spirit of the principle for which ICANN is working. That's why yesterday in our course of our meeting, we did talk about cyber notary. That's why some kind of an authority around that has to be required to really adjudicate on the issue of the person being deceived. It could also be possible, just to take a straw example, that a person feeds in, or any online registration feeds in the detail of a person who is dead, done deliberately for the purposes of seeking a fraud vote. How does one counter that? And the possibilities of misuse in case of an absence of any specific specified mechanism for rechecking the physical identity are many.
The question was actually the process and cost. I don't know. It depends, of course, on which method of coverage and the cost.
And then if you can call,
we didn't cut. We acknowledged that we have a cost. And then this discussion, we broke these discussions apart here today. But as we've been discussing this, we tend to come back and tie these to this to registration. So there's this kind of a combined discussion of three topics. We broke them apart to try to make it easier for people to interact with. There was a discussion, not a cost, that there was a cost to this procedure that was described. And tied it back to the concept of fees generated in some way. You heard that. And, but it hasn't cost. But that's as far as the committee got.
Daniel?
Thank you. possible effort to do some verification or to reduce the number. Not that they'll be that much, but we have to be able to prove that whatever we could do, we did.
That might be one reason why it makes a lot of sense to try to verify as much as possible up front at the moment of registration without it being financially crippling or unduly burdensome, so that at the time of an election there's as little reason as possible to worry or for someone to challenge the results of it. And if you, on the way in, have a way of having to provide some information so that it's validated, all the better. Even if there's not a whole lot at stake, you don't want to have an election that turns out to have been stolen by someone sitting in a computer busily making new entries and registering votes.
So this, we didn't really go into details during our discussions. So there's much room in the lawyers and technical people as well, I think. So can we move to the next subject? That the candidates, are you getting ready, Diane, for the candidates? Thank you. Before lunch, we have 20 minutes to leave.
I'm actually covering three subjects. How to nominate candidates. What criteria we should use in the selection of candidates. And what campaign activities want to encourage. Article 5, Section 9C of the bylaws requires that nominations come from internet users, industry participants, and organizations, and that ICANN should give consideration to such nominees. So independent of how we define membership, we have to reach into a broader category to solicit nominations. There are three ways that we looked at to acquire nominees. The simplest way would be to allow anyone to nominate themselves. Consider whether that had to be a member or not, but I presume it does. So that you can nominate yourself or anyone can nominate you. The second way you could do this is to allow self-nomination with the requirement of some showing of support within the membership, whatever numbers are reasonable, 25 people, 50 people. That we, as a general concept, thought we would only need to do that if you had too many candidates, because if you have 1,000, it becomes difficult for a voter really assess each one. So self-nomination with support is something that might just be used when there's too large a field. The third area to handle nomination is by a nominating committee. There are several things that a nominating committee could do. They could actually solicit candidates, particularly in regions where we are not expecting to get a lot of some regions that seem hard to get, and tasks that could be assigned to a committee. The committee could also verify, allow, if I can nominate Mr. Blankton, well, maybe he's not interested. So how does, who contacts him and that's another chore that a nominating committee could do, to verify the candidate and to verify their criteria, which is the second part. There wasn't a lot of desire for a screening committee. We didn't think that the committee should make value judgments. But, you know, perhaps they can make recommendations. I mean, all things are possible. But in the first year, because we have no representative membership committee, even this one is not really representative, for the first election, we certainly did not think any nominating committee should be fielding points. The second category that we've done work on is candidate criteria. And we did a lot of work on this at the January 23rd workshop at Harvard Boston. Could let anyone self-nominate, but actually running for the position and doing the work requires more than just sending in a name. Some of the criteria that the committee recommended were things entirely subjective, such as submitting proof of citizenship. This is a requirement because nominees have to be, the federal board has to be a regional requirement, so we need to know where you're from. Submitting a statement of biographical information, not exceeding 250 words. Submitting a statement of position on issues, not exceeding 250 words. Submitting a statement identifying sources of income and possible conflicts of interest. It does not mean we need to know how much income you get for an ISP, but it is useful to know that you're associated in a financial way. We were very concerned about having a lot of volunteer organizations. They're not getting paid, so we need to make sure that the candidates will be putting some time in. So we recommend by the candidates to provide internet access sufficient to fulfill the responsibility of the office, which could be worded in so much time. You spend 5 hours a week online or whatever. Another requirement in terms of the work involved in making a commitment to provide adequate personal time to fulfill the duties of office. We also recommended that a candidate provide a commitment to provide, to bear the burden of language translations should that candidate need to do that. Generally, most conversations online. Whatever language is used. The burden of translation for the organization has to pay for all the expenses, not just the professional bodies, but an IT candidate. So if you need to have a translator, it's the candidate's responsibility to provide that. We also need proof of adulthood. There are some negative disqualifications. Do you want to have the disqualification if a candidate is already serving as a director? We don't. The reasonable for them to have two seats. There are no positions that governmental organizations can't serve as directors, so that's a third disqualification. These are criteria that we thought were reasonable, objective, and that should be investigated before the election so that you don't end up having to feel disqualified after the election. The third area we discussed was campaigning, and at this point in time, we recommend two things. One is that, of course, there be a website and or a mailing which all the candidates are identified, plus the data that they have submitted. You could also do this as a web-based page with links to their home pages, if you wish. Second thing that would be very useful would be to have some kind of forum online. It could be a listserv in which the candidates can debate issues. It could be a particular online forum in which the moderator that's a fixed number of questions to the candidates
personal vehicles, but I think that a small
last meeting, which was not reflected in
final or item dialogues.
Okay, this is an answer to the question raised by you, sir. When we talk about regional representation, the bylaws of the ICANN have provided for regional representation. In fact, Article 5, Section 6 of the bylaws is a little categorical. Now it says three conditions, it lays down three conditions for the purpose of ensuring a regional diversity, possibly that unity in diversity throughout the world. Now, these conditions are very important. Now these conditions stipulate, number one, that there should be at least one from each of the five programming regions that shall serve the board other than the commission board at all times. Now, geographic regions have been defined, and they have been defined in Article 5, Section 6. Now, they have been defined into five different regions. They mean Africa, Asia, Australia, Pacific, Europe, Latin America, and North America. Now, these are the five regions that the bylaws have given us. Now, the other conditions that are required by Article 5, Section 6 talk about that no more than one half of the total number of at-large directors serving at any one given time shall be from one geographic region. And the third condition is no more than one half of the total number of directors in the aggregate elected after nomination by the supporting organizations shall be citizens of the country located in one geographic region. Now, these are very important objectives, except these were discussed also at various levels during the course of our meeting. Now, we do find that though these are very important, we should ensure that somewhere down the line, some different trends ought to also emerge. Now, while these alliances go through these bylaws, we find that this at-large membership is directed to have a regional representation. The SOs are not directed to have regional representation. So this may end up with a very unbalanced and unregional representation of the entire board at each. Therefore, one of the strong essential was that the SOs also need to be told that while they are nominating, they should also nominate as per regional requirements. And preferably, they should understand that not more than one of their nominees directors should be from one region. Now, there is also another thing that we looked into, that was on this need for amending Article 5, Section 6, which would make this amendment, making this regional representation qualification also applicable to the SOs. And that also thought of certain practical problems that are likely to arise. Now, as we see, most of the tilt is towards the West, the Americas, and the Europe as far as the internet usage is concerned. And in this part of the world, or in the developing world, we will find the penetration of so one issue that was discussed maybe was, what happens if there is a lopsided voting during this regional representation? To take an example, we thought that somebody from the Asian subcontinent, now there were two candidates from the Asian subcontinent, got on the list. The issue was, we must have one candidate from that geographic region. Should we allow only those members who are from that region to vote for candidates that go to that region? Or should we allow a global vote? There was a minority of people, including mine, to take effect that if you are going to allow a global voting for regional representation, it's likely that the person elected may not be fully, in the true sense, be representative of the region as far as in terms and in conformity with the regional representation principles. Whereas others and majority of the people just feel that let's open it up for the global voting, let the best come forward, let the best be elected. For the first time we are electing nine members, so it's okay, one per geographic region. What happens in time subsequent thereafter, which means when every year there's going to be election of three directors and there are five geographic regions. So it was brought in that the five representation should a recommendation, because SO's recommendations of the directors are already pre-decided and predetermined. Now, supposing it may lead to a lopsided situation within the board, that SOs may decide to, say, nominate XYZ from the same region, and from the same region, ABC also nominate, which would be, again, in contravention with the principle that's laid down in Article 5, Section 6, which is the third principle, which talks about that to no more than one half of the votes from the director, the aggregate entity, not to nomination of the two which are in the country. So one of the suggestions was that this entire structure needs to be reopened to that limited extent. But broadly, there was consensus.
Michael Chagall, the South American Internet Organizations, the number of representatives of the boss, I haven't seen any representatives from LC or Hamad.
I am the director of the
Well, isn't it true that there's a strong protest against this rule that says no more than half the total number of directors to be from one geographic region? Even to me, frankly, that sounds to me just nowhere near strong enough. I mean, that permits 9 members out of the 18 to be Americans, doesn't it? That is what I'm saying. It says that half the total number of directors may be from one geographical region. We wouldn't want to allow that. Shouldn't it be more like, you know, more than one quarter or one third at most should be from one geographical region? If you don't say that, you're going to have 50% of the board that's not.
Answer?
Sure. I would say that the situation may be even worse, which is if you go for a global electorate, that every at large member is going to vote for yes candidates from all regions. Well, the main problem is that most likely, if you consider, let's say, a population of 5,000 individual members or items, there is a very high probability that, let's say, half of them are going to be from the U.S., which means that actually you're going to be voting also for people who will represent regional interests, but mostly they're going to be voted by U.S. citizens or whatever. So the situation can be even
worse. Unless you use microphone like email, unless you send the email, it doesn't reach.
Okay. Yep. This is just to further clarify the point raised by you, Michael. Now, Article 5, Section 6 really asks, one thing that we have to consider is that this article asks the board to determine the specific countries included in each geographic region. Well, that itself is a huge task. But the committee was unanimous that we could possibly write the RIC demarcations and possibly we made some kind of detailed analysis to it so as to include the following. For example, Africa, the geographic region, Africa includes the African subcontinent, African continent, plus the Mideast to Iran and the West Indian Ocean Islands. The Asia, Australian and Pacific geographic region includes the Mideast, Pakistan, India, China, Japan, Australia, Afghanistan, and countries to the east, including East Indian Ocean Islands, Antarctica, exclude U.S. Latin American possessions. As far as Europe geographic region is concerned, we thought that this would include East and West Europe, North Atlantic Islands, Scandinavia, Turkey, Russian Federation, plus the previous members of the USSR. As far as the Latin American geographic region is concerned, we thought it would include the South American and Central American continental nations, plus their possessions, Caribbean islands, the South American islands. And finally, the North America includes the USA and Canada, including territory and possessions. And let's be very clear on one point. Article 5, Section 6 also asks what, and I read it, it says, specific countries in which the justice of the war and this section. And this section shall be reviewed by the board from time to time, but at least every 3 years to determine whether any change is appropriate, taking account of the evolution of the state. These are as far as the geography is concerned. Coming on to the point that Michael addressed, I think not to give a more recent representation. One half coming from one geographic region is not acceptable to a lot of people. Probably this kind of position needs to be completely waived off, and they can be thrown as to the election forces. Or you can look at the
consistent with the balance that was reached in the
first negotiation of the Bible. So we didn't readdress the whole regional representation aspect, and while I perceive that this is a legitimate concern, I'm worried that in such a small group, we're not going to recreate and reorganize those kinds of discussions. I don't think we have the legitimacy for it.
The expert to record, before we get Ben, I think up under regional representation, the second, one of the last two requirements is that no more than one half of the at-large members can be from one region. And I think it's the third of the three. Yeah. There's a board line limit. There's also an at-large. Our proposal is that the SO meet regional requirements, which they do not have to at present. We ask that each SO director be from a different region in each SO, so that you can have, after the three SOs elect, you will have, the most you can do is have three from the same region, one from each of the SOs. And that we continue to meet at the at-large a maximum of half of the at-large. And we also continue to meet at least one each region for the at-large. So that should fairly restrict
just
half of it. I recall that on the mailing list we discussed proposing to ICO to amend the Bible. Is this part of the proposal now?
Yes, that's going to point in this discussion. That's what we'll be doing tomorrow when this committee reports to the board. Actually, what you're going to hear tomorrow is a great deal of what you heard today, if you stay for that. We'll be presenting at this level that report to the board, and to begin the process of the board interacting on these issues at the level that we've been able to bring them to, including this recommendation that Diane just stated as part of it.
Another question. We have decided that one member has one vote. If you have 50 candidates, then you will support this one vote, one candidate, and you elect nine large directors, or will one vote mean you can support nine candidates? And if this is the case, then as a member, are you more than obliged to respect this geographical balance procedure?
It really hit him in the funny that we had so much discussion of how many votes in the organization. We didn't know what it was votes for. But what we really mean, I think, by votes in the earlier discussion is balance, how many ballots you have. It may turn out, again, I don't think that a ballot could be something like the single transfer of a vote, which would be all the candidates listed and you rank them in the order in which you would select them. And then there's a complicated formula by which your ranking translates into your preferences to fill the board in order. That's one way that you can see, not just having a single vote and then two candidates, the end of the story.
The problem with that is that California law permits cumulative voting technique, but not by ballot.
At the risk of having to be a ping-pong match. In general, there are areas in which California law may be restricted. Another example might be quorum requirements, saying you have to have a number of people meeting or voting in person in order to make an election. That may not apply here. Our attitude, a lot of the time, is not to worry about what California law says, and simply to do our ideal best, and then let the lawyers figure out the right way to make it so that either comports with California law or moves the corporation to a more suitable state or country or something, but not to dwell too much on those requirements.
How about? I think just to add something more, it's a question of if it would still be a concept of one vote, but however, that one vote is dependent upon the number of vacancies. For example,
begin with, there'll be 9 vacancies to the board. So you're electing 9 people, you're not electing 1 people. If you're giving one person one vote for the purpose of putting one vote on one of the 9, you're depriving the voter of his legitimate rights of voting. Thus, you're actually nullifying the very concept and the obligation and privileges of membership. If I'm a voter, then I'm entitled to elect all 9. So therefore, it would still remain the concept of one vote. However, I will be given 9 different ballots. All 9 different ballots being sub-parts of one vote. And therefore, I will have choice to elect 9 people rather than to just put my one vote on one of the 9.
Well, we are we are wondering what to go with the time.
I need to make
please.
It's not been discussed at length, but this is a comment about the geographic boundary, and I think my constituency will have a particular keen interest on the proposal to expand what is normally accepted as Africa to include as far as Iran. And that will be viewed as an attempt to dilute our opportunities. So I just want to
of basic ICANN functions through the region. My point is, if you take ISOC for example, you realize that more than half of ISOC individual members are from the US. And if you take the typical chapter of ISOC in any other place, it has less than 200 members. My impression is that ICANN is more or less going the same way, and I think it might be action so that we could actually avoid this unbalanced relation between the at-large membership. So my problem is, how can one divide the structure of the chapters or whatever so that you can actually take a more proactive position concerning membership in developing countries or countries other than the U.S. I have not advanced much in that discussion, and probably I'm going to bring it to the committee, but that's something which hasn't been discussed so much, but I would like to consider it further.
Yes?
Already in bylaws to allow for the membership, the at-large membership, to create the regional or sub-groups for communication. In fact, I'm pretty sure it is allowed. It may be encouraged. Check that paragraph.
Yeah.
You can set a plan. Yeah. Well, that was for voting class. Right, so there's an indication of it. Yeah, so we could work on it. Yeah. And actually, I would expect it would also occur somewhat naturally. And in fact, I would encourage it because we want to get as much global representation as we can, and that may be one of the methods by which we do that. This is the we have finished what we had hoped to cover today. I think the committee kind of feels that it's had some time over, some ground over, and some interaction over the last month or so with people who have contributed to the list. And again, I thank everybody for being here today and for those who have contributed to the list. We're going to break for lunch. I'd like the committee to join back after lunch and discuss some next steps in terms of how we're going to organize our time and subjects that we have yet to discuss, and how and when we're going to do that. So we have a little housekeeping to do after lunch, and also participation tomorrow in the ICANN board.
Yeah, so there's no substantial feedback or input or whatever from the line.
So let's break for lunch, and for the board, the committee rather, come back at 2:15. And if people want to join, that's fine. I don't think we're going to get into a great deal of the issues like we did yesterday and like we covered in the extent of the detail we did today. You kind of know where we are. And
we'll come back at 2:30?
Okay, 2:30, fine.
2:15?
No, no, make it 2:30. We need a break. 2:30.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello, Ben.